handicap with his lost leg, and FDR with his crippling polio problem. If there was ever any sort of personal connection between those two, you're right. Right, I see.
Well, I'm sorry, I never can help you with your questions.
No, that's not exactly true. You've been very helpful in the past, and I'm making some progress with it.
Oh, that's good. I was thinking about it the other day, wondering how you were getting along.
You know, one problem I ran into that I didn't anticipate, I did tape record most of my interviews so that I, you know, for accuracy's sake. And I didn't think enough about the labor, the job there would be in transcribing.
Oh, really?
So I have four ladies, professional transcriptionists, and we're nearing the end of getting all those transcribed, but it's been time consuming.
Well, when do you think you'll have your book ready?
Yes, I'm hoping probably in the latter half of next year, because this
must be a big book.
Well, it is, and you know, I haven't written very much because I'm waiting on these interview accounts, and that's really slowed me down. I should have started having that done, you know, while I was interviewing along, and I guess I waited almost till the end of my interviews, not thinking it would take this long, but.
Well, I appreciate you calling, but I just don't know a thing about that.
Sure, I understand. Well, thank you very much. All right, bye.
That was a phone recording of August the 10th, 1998. A non-interview, a non-follow-up interview.
How about dessert? Well, they have some fresh fruit on that salad, on that salad line, right? I might do that too. I believe we're yes.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Thank you
for
arranging that.
Oh, you're more than welcome.
So that was the top administrative suite, the green doors.
Behind the green doors.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the administrator, the associate, the deputy administrator, associate deputy administrator, the deputy associate administrator. See, they just kept adding titles. You know, when they brought Von Braun up, there was a. Let's see, this was what? January, February of 70, if I recall. See, George Lowe came up in late November of 69 to be deputy administrator.
Right.
And I was assigned as the action officer for that, so I served George Lowe, you know, I was.
Mm-hmm.
And got him brought in and, you know, got all the, handled all the administrative details and that sort of thing, and worked with him. And after a couple of months or so, they brought Von Braun up. So that was in early 70.
Right.
And of course, the reason that I was involved in that, I was in the executive secretariat. And we always had from 2 to 4 individuals which were selected throughout NASA for what they call career development. And you know, you came and served a couple of years in the administrator's office, as of course as a bag toter, you know.
Right.
It probably amounted to a good bit more there. It was quite a bit of, because part of the activity was to educate you to the problems and responsibilities of the total enterprise. As
right.
Mr. Webb used to say, management of large-scale enterprises.
Right.
And he was a master at it.
Was he?
I think he is the most unsung man that NASA ever had. I think he's totally responsible for the success of NASA and the total lunar program, and he got out before we went to the moon.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Paine was a master follower for him, Dr. Paine.
Right.
But Mr. Webb was always educating. You remember he was always talking. But he would listen. You remember the phrase that he used to use, not the phrase, but the one that Congress, you remember that phrase that some congressman or senator said that, could have been a reporter, I don't know, I called, that asking Mr. Webb was a question was like opening a fire hydrant. And it was, but it was worth listening.
Mm-hmm.
It was worth following. And his whole intent and purpose was to get this thing, the space program, for the benefit of the total nation, you know, to have feed out and fallback. He was the one
sure.
who really first pushed the idea that this is not just something to go to the moon. This is to advance the nation, advance
mm-hmm.
technology. He said he's the first I ever heard say that the space program is a substitute for war.
Mm-hmm.
Any nation, and particularly the United States, has always found major advances resulting in technology from wars. You know,
exactly. That's
and he said this
classical, right. And I didn't, Von Braun hit that theme in many of his
yes, and Von Braun
remarks and speeches and everything.
Completely. Yes,
but you think it may have originated with Webb?
Webb was the first one because
mm-hmm.
his whole thought was that this was the benefit. And he truly was selfless. He was a master Washington manipulator.
Oh, sure.
He was the one who really originated. You know, Von Braun and Webb were great, great friends. Von Braun respected Webb. And
oh, really?
Webb respected Von Braun.
Mm-hmm. You know?
Now, there were some other people who had a little different feelings. But
that's what I gather.
But Von Braun respected Webb's motives and his mind. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Webb was a non-technical man. But he managed a technical enterprise,
mm-hmm.
scope we've never had before at that time in the United States. But
he come out of that pit of corporate politics and governmental
that's
politics.
Right.
We had Kerr Oil. What did he,
that's it. Yeah, he knew. He knew
Kerr McGee.
He knew industry from Kerr McGee.
Yeah,
but he knew politicians, and he understood and knew what you had to do with the political realm.
Mm-hmm.
I went with him. Before Von Braun came up, I would travel at night with Webb to see senators and congressmen. We'd be going out to meet him at night, or there'd be a critical problem. See, about that, just before that time, the Phillips Report had come out. This problem with the fire at the Cape, too, see.
Sure.
And the Phillips Report surprised Webb, because the Phillips Report was never a published report. It was one of those completed draft documents
mm-hmm.
that just got stuck in a file. And Webb didn't really know that. He was blindsided.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Phillips Report was the report that said that the capsule is dangerous. And they had uncovered in their study.
And with the one gas
flammable material
atmosphere and
and they had the full oxygen atmosphere. Yeah, that was a dangerous thing. And so that almost sunk NASA, because when that surfaced and the politicians found out about it, and their accusation was simply, well, why the hell didn't you act on this, you know? It's said, so
mm-hmm.
you are at fault, you know, for not making a decision. Well, he couldn't have. He didn't, had never seen it.
Mm.
But at any rate, a whole bunch of us were scurrying around and uncovering that document, too, after the first thing. It came out before, and Webb says, I want to know what that is. Is there one, and what is it? You know?
Mm-hmm.
So we got it out, and of course, when we got the draft report, there was only one copy, supposedly. And we put it into the executive communication files, then, the classified files. And Webb was able to pull us out of all that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I got off course. And didn't mean to do
really amazing. Perhaps not if you know the full circumstances and the players, but that it didn't didn't get to him. The report didn't get to him.
That's right.
Yeah.
Until after it had been, there was some public knowledge of it. Not public knowledge, but there was some knowledge of it in the congressional chamber.
Yeah.
Hmm. And at any rate, of course, he pulled out all the horses, and it was during that time that Von Braun was coming to Washington a good bit too, along with the Houston people, you know, to try to. And I still think Von Braun was one of the people who saved the space program after that, because he had a reputation already for having done what he said he could do and having been accomplished, and was respected not only as a brilliant astrophysicist, if you will, mm-hmm. He didn't like those kind of labels.
Right.
And he wasn't. He was truly a Renaissance man. But he was respected for his communication skills. You know, I always said about Von Braun this, that he could explain to the simple minds of Congress the scientific and technological mysteries of astrophysics and make them think they knew what he was talking about. Because he was. He knew what mm-hmm. he was talking about. Make them think that they knew it. As a matter of fact, they did. He was the master user of analogy, which is one of the keys to communication, you know.
Yes, it is, and I've recognized that in him over the years.
Yeah.
That one was that, you know, trying to look out into space from Earth and through the atmosphere was like being in the basement, looking out the basement, some dirty basement windows
mm-hmm.
To the night sky.
Right.
And
you
can understand this everyday down to Earth stuff.
Picture to, we all know that knowledge, this old cliche, that all knowledge extends out of what you already know, you know, it builds out of previous knowledge. Yeah, there's, you can't learn something new except in terms of something old, something that you can make some analogy
mm-hmm.
to, because that's the way the mind, the human brain works. It's one of the, well, at any rate, another one of his, you remember, this is old hat, you probably have even used it yourself, but this thing about explaining to the Congress that when they had the document tell you way back in the early days when it had big budget items requested huge amounts of money for documentation. And they won't know why. And the devil, do you need so much, you know, paper, you know? He said, well, and he explained it to him, and I'll shorten the thing, but his ultimate analogy was, well, actually, it is necessary that we produce this, you know, documentation, and that there's the reason we need the money is because the amount of documentation that's required is going to be there. If you stacked it up, would reach the moon before we get there with the with the lunar program. And they understood
and
that. And he went on to explain
that
and show them this isn't just a bunch of paper, you know, government-produced paper. It's engineering drawings, engineering technological processes to
mm-hmm.
record it, and that when you count up the number of millions of parts in the Apollo program, and each one must absolutely, without any problem, fit and
function
according to the way it's supposed to, at any rate. So he was good at acknowledging.
Was he subject to people getting out? Some people getting out the long knives against him when he did go to Washington. There's this lay belief, anyway, conventional belief that aside from Webb, let's say, and a few others, that there was great jealousy or envy that when NASA wanted a star performer and communicator at budget time before Congress, they got Von Braun to do it, and yet there were some that still regard him as the former enemy.
That's right.
And were a little envious of his
they were
star
envious
quality.
Because he was the visible space program, see.
He was
the
what?
Visible face.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. He more or less was the father of it.
And right.
He'd been on Walt Disney. He'd been in book publication. He'd been on television.
Sure.
And then he continued to be that, and he continued to be a master of it.
Of Man of the Year, yeah. Or Time Magazine.
He was the person that ended, and always ended up being the star of the show in convincing the Congress and public,
right,
of the necessity and what we had to have.
So there were people who shared his cause, but they felt that there was that resentment?
That's right. And I was there when they first started doing behind the doors discussion about bringing him up there. Now this is loose. It's not gospel. It's some of it was from sitting in on meetings, and some of it was from what was known behind the green doors among all of us, you know.
Sure.
Swapped around from others. Webb first decided that because of the many conflicts, there were several reasons. One, there were many conflicts. There were many people still jealous. And in particular, and I hate to say this out loud because it sounds so prejudiced, but it was a fact that the Jewish contingent, definitely, Abe Silverstein was one of the leaders of that.
Mm-hmm.
And George Lowe. Mm-hmm. George Lowe was, he was not as vocal about it.
Right.
And he was a little bit, you know, not so manipulative or quite the kind of person that Silverstein was. But at any rate,
I never realized Lowe is Jewish.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
And Czechoslovakia, but still.
Right.
You know.
And then there was a science advisor to the president in the struggle over Earth orbit.
Yeah, not Saperstein, I know.
We'll start with the W, didn't it?
Weizmann.
Weizmann.
Yeah, right. Was one of them.
Weizmann or Weizmann?
I was thinking it was Weizmann.
Okay.
There's quite a few years now.
Well, that's right.
That one up.
Yes.
That was definitely, he was definitely one of the ones that, see. So there was this thing about, one, that he was very visible. He was still strong. He was still pushing for Mars programs. And he was still, had a reputation. And there was some reason to believe that he was beginning to be viewed as the person who really got us to the moon, which was a kind of a rub for a lot of the people in Houston.
Mm-hmm.
And that, perhaps there was more concern there. You know, at that time, George Lowe was at Houston. You remember?
Right.
And so, as this was going on, but now there were some good reasons. Webb's position was that there simply was no way that NASA could afford to do without the services of von Braun. Both his knowledge and his public relations as, you know, capability.
Sure.
And his public the reputation. So, as they started to look around, and they started to determine that Houston really was going to be the runner or the operator or the manager or the star in the future of the space program, future of manned space flight.
Right.
And it would be better to bring von Braun to the top. Well, before that happened, then Webb decided, well, actually Webb was in this, but Tom Paine was coming on the scene now, and then Tom Paine came on, and Tom Paine decided that one of the things that he was inheriting here was this problem.
Right. You want to keep that?
I'm going to keep it. I'm going to
keep it. Okay,
that's fine.
I won't bother.
And he, so Webb decided, well, part of the thing of bringing von Braun to Washington was this visibility of bringing him to Washington in an important administrative role. Also was not the solution that it appeared to be, because that rubbed everybody wrong. He ain't going to be my boss, you know.
Right.
So they started trying to define a role for him. And Tom Paine said, well, the first thing we do was, and this wasn't just the only reason George Lowe was brought to Washington. He was a brilliant engineer, and he was not a scientist. He was an engineer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a difference.
That's right, he is.
And the difference, for example, in Von Braun and Lowe, they respected each other. But Von Braun was a scientist and a Renaissance man. George Lowe was a mathematical engineer.
Mm-hmm.
He had a good mind, but he was more of the narrower engineering analysis of things.
Technocrat.
That's right. That was George.
Yeah.
And he was not exactly the outgoing personality that Von Braun was. They were different
mm-hmm.
people. But they had a respect for each other. But they both, I think, recognized where the other one sat. But anyway, Tom Paine said he'd bring George Lowe to Washington as the deputy, the second
right.
man in NASA.
Right.
And as you know, later, when Paine resigned, Lowe came for a short while as the acting.
Oh, okay, yes, okay.
Well, at any rate, they brought their decision in all these discussions. And many people were brought into it. Politicians were brought into it and everything. By the way, there's a man, a little sung man in the hero of mine named Willis Shapley, the number three man in NASA. He was the son of Harlow Shapley, the famous Harvard astronomer.
Hmm. Willis or Willie?
Willis. W-I-L-L-I-S.
Shapley?
Shapley. Mm-hmm. S-A-P-L-E-Y. And he was the...
S-H-A-P?
S-H-A-P-L-E-Y.
Yeah, okay.
He was the little fellow with a little mustache. He looked kind of like a little milquetoast, and when he talked, his little mustache wiggled, so you could almost laugh, because he was a kind of a, you know, an amusing looking, but a brilliant mind.
Mm-hmm.
He was not a scientist. He was not a technical person. But he was the interface, the primary interface, between other than Webb himself, you know. He was Webb's man to deal with congressional activities. We had a congressional affairs office.
Sure.
There were other people involved in it. But he was the strategist and the tactician for dealing with it. And he knew what was going on, and he also took the brunt of a lot of problems from Congress. You know, they'd hit him. But at any rate, and he stayed behind the scenes. But for about 6 months, I was attached to Shapley. The secretariat people, when we were in there, you actually were attached to everybody. You worked all behind the green doors, the whole thing. Part of your job was the communication process, to let
mm-hmm.
one know what the other was doing and what was going on. So that
sure.
was part of our job, the communication function.
Mm-hmm.
And to try to keep the communication flowing throughout all of headquarters and all of NASA. We would be assigned specifically to one or the other of the key people for a short period of time, say 6 months, and then the next time, for a while I was with Webb, and then later for a while I was with Paine, and I took George Lowe when he came. I was with Shapley for a while, and when
mm-hmm.
Von Braun came, they asked, I was already slated to go to Syracuse for a year on an exchange program. They sent a professor to headquarters, and I went to spend a year in residence at Syracuse as advisor to the chancellor.
Mm-hmm.
And so at that time, they asked me, would you stay another 6 months, since you knew Von Braun at Huntsville? So I did. So I then moved to stay with Von Braun for the 6 months before I went to Syracuse. So at any rate, this is a little background. So the decision finally was then to bring George Lowe. And that did everybody well. It certainly satisfied Houston, because they had the second man in NASA.
Right.
And no matter what was done with Von Braun. Remember, this was not the Von Braun thing was not the only reason. George Lowe's technical expertise was needed at this time, too.
Sure.
And
just interrupt and forgive me.
Sure.
Did Von Braun want to go to Washington? I mean, was it in any way his idea initially, or did it come more from
from the point of view, I never actually talked to him about that. But from the point of view of what I learned and what was going on in headquarters, he was not enamored of the idea.
Okay.
But Von Braun was a realist, and he saw the picture, and he obviously did not resist the idea.
Mm-hmm.
His only stipulation, as I recall, what I knew about was that he did not want to be brought up there and set aside in an office and to put to one side and disappear.
Right.
He wanted to be active in the space program, in the activity, in the future, and then continue. And so then to the state, after George Lowe came, then within a couple of months or so, we were ready to bring Von Braun up. So the question was, where do you put him? What happens? And in the meantime, Homer Newell, at some time earlier, Dr. Newell, I don't know if you ever knew him.
I think I met him, and I certainly know the name. Right.
Let's see if I can get these things down right. See, the administrator, then the deputy administrator was Lowe, and then Willie Shapley, at that time, was really the number three man, but he was the associate deputy administrator.
Mm-hmm. And that's
right.
What Von yeah. Braun became, too.
I'm trying to get around to that distinction.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm trying to put it together now. I tried to jot it down last night to recall, because I was, the all these title thing was important.
So. All right.
But Shapley really wasn't the number three man. He was really just the administrative man.
Sure.
But he was number three rank because he was the associate deputy administrator. But Homer Newell was the associate administrator.
Ah, I see.
And Homer Newell really was the number three man, because you have the administrator, the deputy administrator, and then the associate administrator. And Homer Newell was a scientist and basically ineffectual and basically out of the action. There was a lot of science going on at that time, though,
mm-hmm.
so he had some input. But it was really not in the line of direction or of authority, see. But nevertheless, that made him the number three man and Shapley number four man. Well, actually, Von Braun became the number five man.
Mm-hmm.
And there was some discussion. Neither he nor George Lowe really wanted Von Braun to be reporting to George Lowe. So the decision was made that Von Braun would become then, you see, we had an administrator. I have to keep saying this so I can keep him straight. You know, we had trouble to keep him straight back then.
Bet.
The administrator, the deputy administrator, George Lowe, the administrator was Tom Payne. The associate administrator was Homer Newell. And then Shapley, who was really kind of out of the line, he had his own realm of responsibility, the associate deputy administrator. So when Von Braun came in, he became the deputy associate administrator, which in effect said he was the next man after Homer Newell. And he and Homer Newell were in the same area. And Newell was not in the line of authority or command, the line of command. He was more in the line of decision-making about futures and processes and programs and studies and science areas.
Mm-hmm.
And he was also a good liaison for the science community.
So he answered
put
to
Dr. Von Braun into the science
to Newell
side and out of the line of command in NASA.
Right.
No matter what you called him, he was really not in the line of command and direction of
mm-hmm.
of what this center does and that center does. That was still Tom Payne and George Lowe.
And have I not heard you say in the past that he did indeed get shunted aside?
Yes.
Did not get invited to
that,
key meetings?
I don't know if I said that, but... and actually, that wasn't true. There may have been some meetings that he was not asked to, but actually, as long as Tom Payne was there, Von Braun was, and Tom Payne used to come to the office to sit down and have private chats with Von Braun,
mm-hmm.
you know, about major problems. And yes, Von Braun was, but you see, he wasn't there in the decision-making role or a command role.
I see.
He was there as the advisor or the brain to pick, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the reflector on what was going on. You see, if you see
yes, I do.
That's why I was making the distinction.
Almost
when he was
consultative.
That's why he was.
Yes.
Yeah. That's why he was assigned to Homer Newell.
Right.
So that it was clear that there was not a chain of command, because Newell was not in the chain of command.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is all the real situation. On the surface, this was not expressed or said,
sure.
And it was not presented in that light.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, they didn't make an issue of it to Congress or to anybody. But those titles are what get to be, and there was a reason for those titles, you see. The administrator.
Sure, right.
And then the deputy administrator, that was Tom Paine, the deputy administrator, George Lowe, who had only been there a couple of months himself at the time when Von Braun came. And then the associate deputy administrator was Willis Shapley. And Shapley actually did have a line of command authority in certain areas, particularly congressional relations and things of this nature. And the public affairs was under him,
mm-hmm.
In a sense. When I say under him, there was not shown on the chart as directly reporting to him because they reported
sure.
to the office administrator. But whose responsibility was whose within the
mm-hmm.
office? Who dealt with which kind of area?
Sure.
It's just that, for example, all things that were highly technical, Paine shifted to George Lowe. Because Paine himself was not a highly technical man. You know,
mm-hmm.
he had a technical background, but he really wasn't a technical man. And he handled the external relations, contractor involvements, industrial, political things.
Sure.
And of course, major command decisions about technical things.
Right.
But he depended on George Lowe for that.
Mm-hmm.
And Homer knew all science things. But,
Go ahead.
The reason I just keep harping on this because it was such a thing back then behind the doors about who was doing what. To
right.
Okay, but anyway, Von Braun then gave you the through there really in the chain of command.
Yes.
And Homer Newell, who actually was the number three man in NASA, was nevertheless not really in the chain of command.
Mm-hmm.
He was more, again, in terms of advisory and consulting, he'd handle science things. But
right.
he didn't really order and command the Office of Manned Space Flight or Marshall Space Flight Center to do anything, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So they assigned Von Braun as the associate, the deputy associate administrator.
Okay.
He became the,
I got out some files. It's
okay,
very,
so you know
very coincidental. Only last night I stayed at work and I thought, I haven't looked lately at the Times on
the titles were deliberate. That was a result of conscious decisions about political and personal relationships.
Right.
And inter-organizational
right.
relationships.
Were you the one who told me, I think quietly, and it's now become a cliche, it was real fresh when I first heard it, maybe from you, that Von Braun came back, and I may have written this in the Times without attribution to protect the guilty and innocent, that he came back to Huntsville after being in Washington briefly and said, I feel just like a mushroom. that story was...
No, I didn't tell you that.
Oh, okay. And I'm going to botch it, but it's... the door's closed, I'm kept in the dark, and every now and then someone opens the door, and throws in a shovel full of manure, and if you dare stick your head up, it's you're in danger of it being chopped off
right.
like a mushroom. I'm living the life of a mushroom. Is that... But that wasn't you.
No, I didn't tell you that, but yeah, I can tell you from discussions with him that his reference to that kind of thing was that he was aware of the, although he was not told the words that I've been saying,
mm-hmm.
he was well aware of the fact that they had put him in there, and that this thing of not knowing meant or not being told things really was the line of command of major program decisions and direction.
Right.
That He was aware that he had been put aside from that.
He was.
But he was invited to meetings, but he was simply not placed in, and he was on the mailing. He was on the mail list, you know.
Right.
The receipt, everything that came into the administrator's office, most everything, went to all of the
And I heard, I really, truly can't remember where I heard this, but someone who seemed to be speaking authoritatively said that once, that Von Braun, you know, was not invited to some meetings that he thought he should be, and
true.
That on one occasion, I mean, he was up there to deal with long-range planning, you know, that sort of thinking out, and that there was a meeting along those lines or themed that way, and he wasn't invited, but he heard about it, and he shows up when it's about to begin and says, I assume I was just through oversight, I was not invited, and was told, no, you were not invited. Does that ring any kind of bell?
Yeah, that particularly occurred in manned space flight, George Miller. And the excuse was the same parochial interest that occurs in any loose coalition of baronies, is my expression that I've always used, which NASA was. And each with his own parochial interest, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And but banded together for mutual benefit, you know, and over the long haul. But that didn't mean you have to know what's going on in my castle, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Shades of Bill Clinton.
So the
excuse on many of these meetings would be that manned space flight was running its own planning programs, and that they were not, it was that nobody was invited. And none of the Green Door people were invited. And yet, if it was a planning meeting, Von Braun, who had been, I'll talk about that, about giving that role as the planner.
Sure.
Felt he should have been there, you know, just simply because it was a planning meeting. But it was the same as many other meetings that people didn't get invited to. And the whole 2 years I was there, I went through this. As the secretariat, we were supposed to have one representative at all. This came about because of things like the Phillips Report, which caught the administrator out that the communication process was breaking down.
Right.
One of the first jobs I had there. I'd been there 3 months when they gave me a study. It took me a six-month study to find out about the communication links and how it could be improved and what can we do. One of the recommendations
and
I made.
And you did that.
Yes,
yeah.
I did that study and turned it into web. And so he took it, and there were some things implemented in it, not everything that I recommended. But I talked to everybody in the centers and in all of the key people at headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't go sit down with them. And one of the things that I recommended, which was against the grain of them, was that a member of the secretariat, which was the communication link, be invited and included in all key meetings in the various associate administrators' offices. The manned space flight, the space and applications directorate, you know, all of them. And of course, they fought that bitterly, but Webb implemented that. He said, yes, says, by God, I mean, he didn't say it in those words.
Right.
He said, they won't tell me, you know. He said, I want somebody there. He said, I can't think of any better role. Because we've got, that's what your functions are here.
Mm-hmm.
So
was the secretariat with a cap S?
Yes.
It
was called the Executive Secretariat.
Mm-hmm.
It was the key person was the executive officer, and called the Executive Secretary had two roles. When I first went there, the one I served under was Claire Farley, Colonel
mm-hmm.
Farley, who was under Webb and then under Payne as the executive secretary and executive. So, but the secretariat consisted of the rotating career people, you know, coming in. And
sure.
But at any rate, so the problem that we had, we assigned one member of the secretariat to each of the four directorates. We had four executive secretaries at most of the time. And at some time or other, we'd only have two, you know, when there was a rotation going on, you had new ones coming in. So we'd have signed one to two of them. And I remember Jim Long was assigned to manned spaceflight, and he had the same problem Bun Brown did. They would not let him know when a meeting was going on. And he was supposedly, by order of the director, the administrator, to be there, you know.
Right.
But it was the same principle. And in some justice, some fairness, those meetings, even though they may resulted in decisions, the decisions could not always be made final, depending on what level they were, until the administrator passed on it. But they were working meetings, you know. So
sure.
In some sense, their justification is, well, look, we're hashing this out over in our division, you see, our directory. We're working on this. We have nothing to say yet. We don't, you are the administrator, not supposed to be a part of all this detail. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so there was some justification to it.
I see.
It's only that Webb didn't know things being made, decisions made, and things swept under the rug that he didn't know about, because he'd been called on the Phillips report, that he felt, well, the only way to do. So, in other words, it becomes sort of like, from their point of view, the administrator's got a spy sitting in here, you know.
Sure.
So they wouldn't
sure.
let you know when it was going on. So we had a big fight with that. So the same thing happens when Von Braun comes, even if it's a planning decision. So that left him, and he was taking his planning responsibility seriously. And he felt that he did have the right, excuse me, to be in, because this was the headquarters level, at least.
Sure. You know. And not just to observe, but to
be
have input.
If he was supposed to be in charge of NASA's future planning, then he ought to be a participant in it. Yeah.
Right.
So you can see there was some justification from the point of view of each side.
Sure. Right.
But he was aware of that. And one of my roles in working with him was trying to keep him aware of when there was a meeting going on, whether he was invited or not, and we would get an invitation.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time that I remember anything had occurred like that. And I can't remember now any specific instance, well, maybe once with a science and applications meeting. When you went to the, you didn't go to the, it was the underlings who set it up that did this a lot of times. So, for example, if they had a space and a meeting that Von Braun's, that we found out about it, sounded like he might need to be in or something.
Mm-hmm.
I'd go to George Miller. I went to the, you go to the top when you have something like that. You understand?
Right. Oh, yes, right.
And obviously, usually he would get the decision that he could do that. But there were still those that took place that we didn't know about. And it may, by now, may or may not have been. I think the real problem was all of the administrators, the deputy administrators, knew NASA was not, although Tom Paine was serious in having a planning activity, George Lowe wasn't so serious about it. At the headquarters level, George Lowe didn't feel like it could be done. I mean, he didn't think there was that plans evolved out of the manned space flight, science and application of space flight, and came upward, that you couldn't sit at the top and make plans. Well, Von Braun said that, too. That's why he wanted to be in what was going on down there.
Sure.
So, at any rate, the only thing I can think of is that Von Braun was left out of some. But he was not left out of a meeting when Tom Paine was concerned.
Oh, I see. And you
George think... George Lowe would talk with people behind his doors and not call Von Braun.
Is that right?
But again, that's kind of part of any organization. Some of the people felt they had a right to come in there and say, hey, we've been working on so-and-so. We want to talk to you about this, George. And George is making technical decisions for the NASA. And it was his area of responsibility. And then, only then, did he need to say, okay, well, let's talk to Von Braun about this. So the meeting could take place and Von Braun wouldn't be in there.
Right.
But, to go back to the reason, all these people really knew, even though Tar Payne was serious about trying to get this planning thing, that NASA really didn't have its heart in establishing a major top-level planning activity. And Von Braun ran head-on into this. He was serious about doing it because he liked to have a role. He you know, he said, well, maybe I can serve in this. I can do something with this because that's kind of my field.
I got you. Before I forget, and I should have looked to see if the time in our archives has a bio sketch on you. Do you have a handy
I have one.
Either you can send me a copy of, or
y'all have to condense some things. You know, you have all those in your files, but it's been a while now since I've used one of them.
Because just for background, I need to know the years, when and where, and you know what the titles were. And
I'll put that in.
Maybe as a further reminder, and as an address, since I don't have email yet. My wife is just, who's not a technical person, is just chomping at the bit to get on the internet and explore that.
It's the greatest thing yet, but it's also the greatest time killer.
Oh, and that's what I fear.
I have written 40 pages of original material in the 4 years I've been on the internet.
Well, I'm going to learn to avoid that because I got too many other things.
You got the mousetrap mind and the searching mind, and I get on it. Oh gosh, and then I just keep going. You keep going. You get, and it takes time. You know, there's a wealth. There's everything out there.
Donald Bowden. Do you know him? He used to be with NASA.
Yeah, Marshall. John Bowden.
He ran the solar energy program.
Yeah, I remember.
And he now heads up Bowden Industries. Mm-hmm. He's out of the solar energy business, but into the parts cleaning machine business, and got about 100 employees.
That's an excellent.
And I bought a little stock about 10 years ago from him. And it's finally looking like it might lead somewhere.
It ought to be.
So why did I bring up Don? What we were talking about?
The Lord that we were talking about.
Sorry. My wife said my epitaph should be, but I digress. and she's right. Donald, within the last year, got the internet connection, you know, at home personally and at the office too, I think, and became addicted. And he was the first one to say he just was so fascinated with it. And just as you said, one thing led to another, and he was searching all over the place, and he wound up spending 4 hours a night on the damn thing.
Yeah.
And it took him weeks to kick the habit to get a little bit satiated, I guess, and then be more reasonable about it. But
and add that to email, and you develop your coterie of email friends, or your old friends, and you spend a lot of your time on that.
I'll bet.
And I keep finding all these newsletters on interesting areas, and I get them on there, so when you open up, you've got about a string of 16 or 20 every day emails, some from friends, but mostly from all these newsletters, and you don't have to ever read all of them. You know, before we left Bud Brown, there was something I wanted to...
And I got a few more, a couple of specific questions.
Okay, why don't we get your questions?
Well, you first.
I digress. But back from the purely business aspect of things, Von Braun, one of the first tasks we had, I had two major things to do for him. I set up a tour, and we just took the NASA Gulfstream of all the NASA centers.
When he assumed his new duties.
So he and I, and sometimes a group of people, as he assumed his new duties, we visited every center, which is one of the great experiences. I had not been to all the centers.
Right.
And you know, you get the... I told you about that Tim Conway. You remember Tim Conway? I told you about that thing. My whole time at headquarters, and especially with Von Braun, was like the Tim Conway way, in McHale's Navy, and as a young ensign, he stands around at the table when the big thing's going on at a conference and says, gee, I love this kind of talk.
Right.
And that's the way I felt.
Right.
Well, anyway,
you did.
So anyway, made the tour. I'll tell you about some of the things that happened on that. But the other thing I did was to bring in the administrator and his key people for one or more briefings and presentations, usually several, of every one of the four directorates. You remember there were four directorates at that time?
Sure.
And space flight, space and applications, technology, that was Truszynski, and space flight with George Miller. Space and applications was and see Biggs had gone over
science
to the
science and applications or
science and applications.
Okay.
Biggs was there for a while. I loved him, Jim Biggs. He went over to Hood.
I met
Bruce London came in
okay.
For that. What was the other? Oh, John Norgel, space and applications. And so London was not space and applications. He was what? Well, I'll think about it later. He was the fourth one. But anyway, science and application was probably the second most important and major. In fact, it was assuming a new importance because the future of NASA had to do with science, you know,
mm-hmm.
the science and the applications now that we could satisfy or provide with the space.
Some practical benefits
practical,
and
yeah.
all that, right.
And the things that, you know, like Hubble Telescope, which eventually came out as things like this. Well, at any rate, I had to bring them all in. And that was the most fascinating thing for me, was when they'd come in, and whether it was the director or his people, usually it was a whole series. You might spend a whole day with one group, you know, make a series presentation. And Von Braun would get back over to the back of his desk, back in the corner, and there'd be two or three others come in, you know, several. And Von Braun would sit on back there and lean back, put his glasses hand in front of him like this, back in his chair. And after about the first 10 or 15 minutes of the briefings or presentation, you see this glaze go over Von Braun's eyes. You can see it's like a screen.
Mm-hmm.
He was there, and he wasn't missing a thing. But he had gone into the realm of astrophysics and the great outer space, and he was solving problems or working on things or developing new ideas
mm-hmm.
on his own.
Hmm.
And yet he would continue to comment on the presentation that was going on.
Right.
He knew he was not. That was the mind that he had,
hmm.
that he had the capability that
mm-hmm.
he could function on those various channels and levels. And he would even say, oh yes. And every once in a while he'd even ask a question
mm-hmm.
of the guy. I remember him asking questions of John Norgel, you know. I mean, highly technical questions.
Sure.
And the glaze never left his eyes. He was still, but
is that right?
He kept,
yeah.
And he had the people, you've heard of people, mousetrap minds. That doesn't fit Von Braun. His was, I don't know what analogy we would use, because he had such greater depth. His memory, a mousetrap memory, or, you know, a photograph.
Steel trap.
It was not a photographic memory, because photographic, think of one dimensional.
Right.
His memory was in depth of things that went on.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so he'd go through the whole day like that. But he, and sometimes some of the other people presenting would notice that, and they'd think, well, he's not listening. It's about that time he'd ask him a question. They couldn't believe
mm-hmm.
it. Well, anyway, that was one thing that I learned about him, is
mm-hmm.
his ability to function at different levels at the same time.
Right.
And I'll tell you something amusing, a couple of amusing stories, which probably, I'm not sure this one should see the light of day. To my knowledge, it never has.
Okay.
But I want to tell it to you because it tells you something about Von Braun as a person. You know, several of these I'm telling because of my respect for him as a human being. Always was thoughtful of you. Of all the people I've known, you were not a cog. You were not a little gear in the process here. You were somebody, and he talked to you in first name, and he was thinking of you as Jim. You know,
mm-hmm.
not my assistant or something like that.
Right.
Well, a guy named Julie Curtis is his secretary. K-E-R-T-E-S. Absolutely.
K-E-R-T-E-S. Yeah, right.
Julie Curtis.
In Washington,
and then
right.
my secretary was Alma Green, who came in, who became John Brown, Von Braun's second secretary, too. But anyway, Julie Curtis was just a master for Von Braun. She had just the right amount of officiousness and thoughtfulness and brains to help maintain, to keep the door closed when it should be closed, and to do the things that he needed. So I think he'll always appreciate it. He once told me that he appreciated me finding Curtis for him, because that was one of my first jobs, was to find him a secretary.
Mm-hmm.
So we brought him several, you know.
And right.
In the end, he picked Julie. So, but at any rate, I don't know how I got onto that. I didn't intend to, but I accept the thinking that he thought of her in terms of a person, too.
Mm-hmm.
She was, and she often remarked about that.
Just as he probably did with Bonnie Holmes.
Absolutely.
I
have heard him speak of Bonnie Holmes as, in most glowing terms. Mm-hmm. I don't mean, Von Fowler wasn't a person to just get to talk about people and get thrown up, but her name would come up. And I had to call Bonnie several times there. He said, you know, call Bonnie. She knows that. So she knows everything. And he said, you know, there's never been the greatest thing that ever happened to me is something like that with Bonnie Holmes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd get on the phone and call Bonnie,
sure,
wherever she was, about something that he needed to know. But about the presentation. So we went the rounds of the presentations. And he knew, after all that series of several weeks, he knew what was going on. But back to the planning thing. In order to give him a functional role, Payne and the other people felt some need of some, we were at a crossroads, you know. Where are we going from here? What are we going to do?
Sure.
Well, Von Braun, of course, wanted to promote still the outer space, the Mars program.
Right.
He kind of got shunted on that and kind of, you know, okay, let's go in. So his great thing was two things. One was the application of working satellites. He's the first person I ever heard said, put a transponder on there and you can track every railroad car in the United States. Said, just put a transponder on every railroad car. Said, that was one of the, see, he looked at problems. This is one of the major problems in the United States at that time, and I guess still is. Keeping track of where are your cars, all these major
rolling
railroads, and where is your rolling stock? Where is it?
Hmm.
Where's the empty, where's the load, where's it going? Just where is it, though, physically?
Right.
He said, just put the transponder on the satellite. And you know that they have, in the last few years, they have come up with that kind of, that possible application of things.
Mm-hmm.
Did you put a transponder or anything on Earth, like the transport trucks?
Sure.
Tell where every one of them is. Well, at any rate, that was one of the working application satellites was one
right.
of the things that he was interested in, since the Mars thing was on the low key. And, of course, the space station, he never lost interest in that, in promoting that.
Sure.
And that, all the things you could do in space and not do. So those are the three things that, in his plans, he wanted to see. And, of course, the working satellite thing was a masterful thing for the public relations with the scientific community. They were a tremendous influence. And you know, there were time and time again when the scientific people said, and they're still doing it today, hey, you want to put a man up there? Says, we need some things done. Says,
right.
Says, you're worried about manned spaceflight. We need to get more and more science, you know.
Mm-hmm. that seems to be the eternal struggle or conflict there.
So at any rate, when the company decided that, well, okay, we will establish what we call a NASA planning office. And Von Braun, this is your baby. You will establish the NASA planning office. The top level planning for the future of NASA.
Mm-hmm.
Space program, not NASA. Excuse me.
Right.
And so that was undertaken. Administratively, he was given... Somebody says, take 30 spaces to start with and build you an office, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And if I recall, the number was 30. They gave him 30 spaces. They said.
And he had been there how long? Then this was...
This was right after he arrived.
At the outset.
Yeah,
okay.
This, I don't know that there's been some little talk around the headquarters of that, but I don't know if he had ever had full-scale discussions about it before he got there or not.
Mm-hmm.
But at any rate, within a few days, so... First thing, he sat down and talked to me about people and this kind of thing, and said, what I didn't know, go find out. Now, the reason I keep bringing myself in is only because, see, I knew the players. That was my value to him.
Sure.
I knew the players, because I'd been there for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew where what was going on where and who was doing. And so I was of some value to him in that.
Sure.
And I knew who to get when he needed something. I knew who to go to when he needed information or needed help on something and that sort of thing.
Right.
I knew who to bring in to set up his giving the information, briefings, presentation.
Right.
Well, not because I'm so brilliant. You know, I've just been there.
But sure.
And you can't be in an organization, particularly at that level, at the administrative level, that you don't have to know what's going on.
Not, right.
Yeah. Part of our function was to know what's going on.
Sure.
Well, at any rate, so you understand I'm not bragging. That's what
I'm saying. Oh, I got you.
Right. It was, because it's the greatest experience. I was writing to my friend Gillis Morgan the other night. I said, something about the three of the greatest years of my life, you know, but so-and-so, you know, but in NASA. And I said, come to think about it, I can't think of any years with NASA that I had that wasn't the greatest years of my life.
See, I love that kind of talk.
So anyway, he started this layout planning. So he got Ray Klein, who was a good organization man.
Mm-hmm.
Ray was up at headquarters.
I remember that name.
All right, so he brought Ray in, and he started that now. And then he got a fellow named Jim Skaggs. You know him. He's a